Welcome to our paranormal afterlife. This is our paranormal afterlife, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And if you want to hear the extended version of this episode, please join the Patreon campaign. This week, I'm talking to Steve Herman about his book, Spiritual Mediumship, A Medium's Adventures with the Spirit World. Stephen holds credentials as an ordained minister, certified medium, and teacher with the National Spiritualist Association of Churches in the USA, and has taught for the International Spiritualist Federation in the UK, and he is a former research medium for the University of Virginia. Hi, Steve. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Well, hello. I'm so happy to be here. I really appreciate you having me on as a guest.
So we're going to talk about mediumship and about your book, which is Spiritual Mediumship, A Medium's Adventures with the Spirit World. So can you tell us how this all started for you? Were you very young?
Everybody is, obviously, everybody's psychic. Everybody has intuitive abilities. So in order to be a medium, you're basically just using your psychic abilities to be able to connect with the spirit world. So it's not like someone who is a medium is on some type of pedestal and has some type of super extraordinary powers or abilities. So I've always been really, really open to the spirit world since I was little. And I don't think that's unique or anything. I think that's probably pretty normal. Although certainly there are people who might not be as in touch with it quite the same way.
So did it start for you when you were like 2 or 3 years old? What's your first experience?
My first experience took place when I was 2. And my my mother's father, spoke to me. So that was my first experience. And I was always really drawn to this type of stuff too when I was quite little. And I was very open to the spirit world in terms of having experiences. And I'm pretty sensitive, and I'm also very artistically oriented. So when someone is artistically oriented in a general sense, they tend to be more in touch with their intuitive abilities anywhere compared to somebody who might be more putting an emphasis on their analytical mind.
Because I read that there was it that you were young and there was a man's face over your crib and you thought it was God?
That's a long story, but basically, okay. So when I was 2, my mom read me this book about, it was this one book that had to do with world history, and they had this whole section on medieval history and medieval pageantry, and much of which focused on biblical concepts. So you had whole parts of it where, you know, they would have the depiction of man's fall and, you know, heaven and hell and Satan, this type of thing. So I was already thinking a lot about God at that point. And there's also this book, which I took out from the library, which is on Noah's Ark. And Noah looked a certain way. I remember he had like this little white mustache, and it's like a little kid's book. So anyway, I had read those books, and I remember I had this dream. And I remember I went to heaven, and I remember I was talking to God, and God in the dream looked like the way Noah looked in this particular kid's book. And I remember talking about all this stuff. And as I was having this dream, which was more like a dream typically would be with the imagery and everything, it completely shifted where I could see the face quite up close of someone quite older, you know, with a white mustache. And I could also hear the person talking to me, just fully audible, like I was physically hearing the person and everything. And I remember the person, you know, talking about, you know, my mom, and to say hello to my mom for him and all this. And actually, you know, kind of emphasize that, you know, like, you will talk to her, won't you? So, you know, know, the next day, I did, but I had this idea in my, with my 2-year-old mentality somehow that that was God, because that's the way it had been, the part that had been a dream, that's the way it had been. And so that was basically my first experience.
So you've worked out that it was your mother's father.
Well, I never met the guy on a physical type of level. Now, I remember him talking about my mom. And, you know, at that time, I didn't have any kind of conception of that. I kind of put two to two together at a later point and everything, because I'd always remembered that. And I didn't really think of it in terms of mediumship when I was very little, just because I didn't know about those types of things. But yeah, I think that's pretty cool, the fact that he would communicate with me.
Did you talk to your family about it as you grew up? And were they a bit?
No, I didn't talk to my family about, I mean, other than that time with my mom. But like I said, I just thought of that as being a, you know, somehow like I was talking to God, and, you know, he made me promise that I'd tell my mom. So I did, but I didn't realize that, you know, that would have been her dad and everything too. But it's not like my family ever, you know, tried to suppress or stop me or this type of thing too. I mean, when I was little, I went with my mom, you know, we went to a group, you know, learning how to meditate, this type of thing. I remember, it must have been when I was around 7, they had this really, this is on TV. We only got one channel at that point, because in the States, they only really had 3 main channels. So we got one of them, because our television would only have reception for one. And I remember there was this one documentary type show, and it was on all on like different types of churches, and, you know, how different religions worshiped in these different churches. And I remember there was this one part of the church, like, you know, and we're going to take you to San Francisco, and it had like this priest marrying 2 men. And I'm thinking, like, what the heck? This is why I remember this, because like 2 guys getting married. So I remember, you know, asking my mom about that. Now, that same particular documentary, I remember they said, and now we're going to take you to, you know, England, where, to a spiritualist church where, you know, mediums, you know, communicate with the dead. And I'm instantly, I was like drawn to it. Now, this is when I was 7. And they had this, basically it was this guy standing up in front of all these people in the church talking to them. That was part of what I remember from that. And, you know, the guy talking and everything, it was kind of boring. Like I was a little bit disappointed. Now, I was only 7. I'm not sure what I expected, but I remember that for my whole life. And, you know, later on, you know, once I start getting into spiritualism, I always remembered that, you know, it's kind of like maybe the first time I'd ever really heard about mediumship or spiritualism. Now, I had remembered it as being some type of document, you know, that one TV show. And I even like looked for, you know, I searched for it online for places that might have had archival footage of what that particular show was, which I couldn't find any reference to it. But then a couple of years ago, I was on YouTube, and I was at the Spiritualist National Union website, which, and they have a lot of different material on it, you know, some which is really good. And they had this one, I was watching this one video, and it was of Gordon Higginson, who later on had become, you know, the president of the Spiritualist National Union for quite a while before he kicked the bucket. And it had him in, you know, in at this one church working an interview with him. And that's what I had seen in this particular television thing on churches. You know, they had used that particular footage, which I think was from like 1968 or 1969, when that would have been done, which is something that one would be able to find now on YouTube. But it was pretty cool, because I actually saw that when I was little. You know, they'd obviously edit it for this American documentary thing that which they did on churches. So that's my story about that.
So when you got to be a teenager in your 20s, maybe, was there a sudden thing that made you think, this is what I want to do, mediumship? Or did you just go off on a completely different course? Because I've talked to some people, they seem to have these talents, but when they become a teenager, they get more interested in, you know, the kids at school and just having fun, and they leave that behind.
Yeah. Well, I would say, I mean, I really, well, I, because I've been exposed to meditations and I want to be a yogi, things like this. So actually when I was little too, I used to pretend that I was taken over by this other entity and then I would pretend to be the other entity. You know, this type of thing, like I go to sleep and then the other personality would take over, you know, this type of thing. And, you know, I used to play that with my brother. And so when I was a teenager, I got into like traditional martial arts, things like that. I was really into that, which has a meditative aspect to it. And then it also has an intuitive aspect to it too, because you do end up cultivating your sensitivity to life energy as part of the training. And of course, if you're working with martial arts, you develop like an awareness, you know, when you're actually doing it, you know, interacting with other people as well, you know, who might be your opponents. So I sort of was still drawn to it, but I can't say I was focusing on it completely. But what ended up happening as a teenager is I started having a lot of like out of body experiences, as well as telepathically, you know, an awareness of when I was able to, you know, to pick up on thoughts of other people, this type of thing. So that kind of got me into looking into it more and studying it.
So what was it like when you're having an out-of-body experience? Is it that you're out-of-body and you're just as aware as you are right now, or is it more dreamlike?
Well, the thing with out-of-body experiences, right, we have our physical body, and then we have our subtle bodies, which interpenetrate the physical body. And just in a general sense, you know, when people sleep, the subtle body can become disconnected, and you know, you can travel out of the physical body. And sometimes, I mean, people will have recollection of that. It's kind of like sleepwalking. You know, if someone sleepwalks, you know, they're going to remember themselves sort of like physically moving around. Maybe they're, you know, going down the hall at their home or whatever it might be. But then they're sort of like half asleep. They're not really fully consciously aware of what's going on, but they're aware of it. So with a lot of out-of-body experiences people have, it's sort of like that. And they'll have this awareness, almost like a very, very, very vivid experience, which is very different than a dream that someone might have that's just because they ate too much pizza the night before. So, but you can also have out-of-body experiences where you project out of the body and it's just as conscious as your regular everyday, you know, just walking around doing whatever you might do in your life. You know, your sense is fully aware and everything. So I did have an experience that was quite strong. And I remember I think I'd been reading a little bit about out-of-body travel. So it must have been there on an unconscious level. So I woke up in the middle of the night and my body was in some type of, it was just like all rigid. It was in this trance-like state. I couldn't move it at all. And I remember, you know, thinking about, you know, out-of-body travel. And I started feeling these vibrations. It felt as though the whole bed was moving that I was lying on, literally. And it was like waves of energy, or just like a vibratory wave that just kept on going. You know, it started with my toes and it went all the way up, you know, through my body. I mean, it felt like I said, the whole bed was moving or my body was moving, even though, and I was fully conscious when this is taking place. So I'm not asleep, not on an unconscious level. And it started, you know, with my toes. And, you know, it kept on doing it. So it would be like waves, you know, it would go all the way up. And as the wave went up higher and higher up through my body, I could feel myself start to, almost like my awareness was also moving up the body. And I remember it just like literally moved and I literally like popped through my forehead. Literally, I could feel myself going out of my physical body through my forehead. I floated up to the ceiling, and all the way up, really up close, up to where the ceiling was, where I had like this poster over my bed. Now my ceiling was more at a slanted type of angle because I was up in you know the top part of the two-story house. It would have been slanted like the roof, So the roof was kind of like triangle shaped at the very top of the ceiling, so to speak. So, you know, I went all the way up, and as this was taking place, I mean, it felt really awesome. There's like all this like white, almost like sparkling light all around me. And I really felt like just completely not restricted at all by the body, obviously, and this real feeling, overwhelming, blissful. I mean, the only word I could describe it as very blissful, like just feeling so much love and feeling not contained by the physical body. And I guess I had like this realization, oh boy, I'm not my body and everything. But then part of me was thinking, oh my God, well, you know, what if I was dead or something, or, you know, what if, you know, I wouldn't, because I didn't actually want to, you know, physically die or, you know, or leave my body that way too. So I remember I went up to the ceiling and I'm thinking all these different things simultaneously. And as a result, I literally just found myself very quickly, like just moving right back into my physical body, like popping right back in. And this must have been like around like 2 a.m. when all of this took place. I think it was like right around the winter solstice too. It was like in December at that time, I remember. Like it was a little bit before Christmas, a couple of days. But that's what I remember about that.
Did you do it again? Did you find a way?
After that happened, I mean, I was thinking about it a lot. So I started going out a lot. Not so much the way my first experience was, but what would happen is I, you know, we continually experience those like vibrations, and I started thinking about it a lot more. So after that, I started doing a lot more traveling, more like the sleepwalking, because I'd go to sleep first, and because I'd programmed myself to be able to do it while I was asleep, I would go out and I'd have different experiences. You know, some of which not vivid the same way, because it was sort of like I was half asleep and everything in varying degrees. So, but it was quite neat. And then I also started, you know, like reading about it, or, you know, reading and related subjects as well, related to, you know, the psychic development and everything.
So was there one particular incident that brought you into mediumship?
Well, all of that stuff was sort of gradually getting me into it, I would say. There's no one incident. I mean, that what I just described, that particular out-of-body experience made me start to really focus on all of the stuff quite substantially. So that maybe you could say that would be like the particular incident that I just described and everything. So I really heavily got into it.
Did you go to things like development circles and, you know, get a mentor?
There's this one man I know who was a professor. You know, he worked with a lot of graduate students at the nearby university, and he had opened up, you know, where he had worked with, you know, his guides started speaking to him. I think he was like mowing his lawn, and he started hearing all these voices and everything. And he had gone to, I think he went to grad school in Harvard. Maybe he went to undergraduate at Harvard. No, his grad school was in Harvard, but he was also Ivy League for his undergrad, and really, really interesting fellow. And he loaned me a lot of books, but he also just said, you know, you'd find a teacher. But he hadn't worked with a teacher. And he just said, because he didn't work with a teacher to open up, kind of like learn how to control his abilities, discipline himself and everything, it had probably taken him twice as long. Now, at that time, because I was just a kid, I was a teenager. I didn't have any kind of license to drive. I was relying on public transportation, this type of thing. So I was just like reading lots of books about it and everything too. But I really wanted to get a reading and everything. And mediums that would have been around, it would have been really challenging to find a way to get to them if they were 30 miles away, you know, drive, that type of thing from where I was living. So I wasn't able to do that. But I remember one summer I was with my brother and one of my friends in New York City. And there was some fortune teller. She goes, I really wanted to get a reading. So we went to like this gypsy fortune teller. And, you know, she worked with my friend. And then, you know, her daughter, teenage daughter, worked with me. And it was really just a lot of generic type stuff, you know, basically. They might have only been for a couple of minutes and they want another $5 off of us, this type of thing. However, around that time, I also saw an article in the paper for this local, the spiritualist camp meeting, which had a temple where spiritual services were taking place, that was having some type of like psychic fair or day where they were having readings by the mediums. And they're having it on a Saturday. Now I read about it in like the Sunday paper. When I actually read about it, it was like the next day on a Sunday. Maybe it was the Saturday paper, but I read about it on the Sunday. Oh, I'm sorry. No, they had a whole article about the place that interviewed people. So by the time I read it, it was Sunday afternoon. And even if I could have arranged a ride to go to it, I wouldn't have, made it in time because that I think they were doing at least the readings part on the Saturday. And so I remembered that, and I made a note of it. And the following year, because I knew when it was going to be, I ended up, arranging with someone I knew who had a car to give me a ride up there. And I went and I had a reading with this one medium. And the medium, was very, 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 open, really receptive, and ended up, say, yeah, you can call me anytime, or you can write me, stay in touch. And it was really good. So I started sort of getting like instruction from him in terms of mediumship, but I wasn't sitting in a group at all and everything. There really weren't groups that were going on. I didn't have any kind of transportation. So that was a problem.
So I've got a whole ton of questions about mediumship and perhaps how it works. What do you think are some of the common misconceptions about mediumship? Is there people that come to you who think it is something completely different to what it actually is?
When people go to a medium, in a general sense, they really don't have a clue about it. The bulk of people, maybe they've watched the medium on TV or, and there's a tendency for people to lump it in with fortune telling. What's going to happen tomorrow? And I'm going to go, you're going to meet a man with a gold tooth, or you're going to have pizza on Wednesday night, this type of thing. So, and that's entertaining. So people think of it as like this gypsy fortune telling. And although all of these different like psychic types of arts, someone could read someone's palm or they read cards or astrology and stuff. The spirit world can work through people that way too, of course. And that's all really good because someone's using their intuitive abilities, but it's really different. The focus with mediumship is completely different, and it really shouldn't be something which is on a very surface or superficial type of level. It's really more on a soul type of level, and it's a lot deeper. So people don't necessarily understand that at all. I'm really into the teaching aspect of mediumship. So if someone comes, I always explain how I work and everything. But also people have different reasons why they're coming. What motivates them? In some cases, because they've lost someone close to them and they really want to connect with that person or maybe even more than one individual. In other cases, they're really interested in their spiritual growth, and maybe they don't need evidence of survival. They're more interested in soul growth. And in that type of situation, the higher guides are going to come through with information that will really help that person spiritually with their development. And then you have people who they sort of just want to know they want advice. It's more on a mundane type of level. People typically worry about, the relationships, family relationships, that type of thing. People also, a lot of times, can be concerned about their career. Maybe they don't have a job or they're looking for a job or their money situation that's all related to that if they have problems. And then, of course, as people age, oftentimes people are worried about, they're concerned about their health and things. So those three areas are what people ask about. And then the last area, again, would be people who really are interested in their spiritual growth. Along with, of course, you have the area of wanting to communicate with specific people. So when you do a session as a medium, at least the way I work, that the spirit world basically prioritizes what that person needs to hear. And they're going to come through with information that will help that person. And so as a medium, my responsibility is to be clear with what I get, with what I receive, and to be able to give it out in an accurate way, which it's going to be understood by the recipient. And it's all teamwork. You know, I'm working, but anybody coming through from the spirit world who's connected to the recipient of the communication, that individual has been vetted. You know, they're being permitted to come through. They're assisted in the process because I have, you know, a band of spirits, team of specialists in the spirit world who function as intermediaries. So the average person who comes for a reading, they don't know anything about that. They just want to hear, you know, from their mom, or they just want to know that, man, I'm having the affair with that my work. You know, when's he going to leave my his wife for me? I went to this other psychic in Sedona. You know, they said he's my soulmate. This is the kind of stuff they want to hear. I want to know when my husband's going to die. Well, you know, Thursday at 4:30 in the afternoon this week. Then you have to tell them that you're joking. But people ask things like this. You know, it's quite interesting.
So when you're doing it, does the stuff come to you? Like, do you hear voices, or is it all visual, or is it something else?
You know, if you go back within the spiritualist movement, you have different mediums working. And what you would see is you would have some medium would be like for example, Doris Stokes, who you would know because you're in the UK. You know, she has real numbers. Now, she's clairaudient. And she would hear, you know, the spirit speaking and everything. And other mediums, and maybe they'd be really, the focus would be clairvoyance. And what I've seen over, you know, in the present is most mediums, it's all mental mediumship. It's telepathic communication. And our psychic senses really represent the physical senses. And you really get a little bit of everything. You know, you can mentally hear, you can mentally see, a lot of it's, you know, mentally sensing and feeling, right? You'll feel mentally impression within your own body. You're also smelling, tasting, and you also have clear cognizance. And the information is just like there. There's a knowing, which is like information-wise, which is downloaded into your mind. And so all of that happens kind of simultaneously. You know, I'll receive all of that. I mean, I can remember as a student medium, you know, again, going up on the platform. And you might get like, you know, 7-8 things all at the same time with all those different modes, which you have to mentally kind of put it all together. Maybe some of it might need to be interpreted or translated. And you just have to articulate it as you're getting it. And then you get another 7 things or another 10 things, literally simultaneously. So the information in the spirit world, it's a much faster frequency in the spirit world. And they transmit, generally speaking, the information quite quickly as well. So as a medium, you've got to be able to put that all together and to be able to verbalize it properly, which is good because the more spontaneous you are just in conveying it, the less likely you're going to sort of get involved and change it around, which is what happens sometimes. People will, you know, they start analyzing things or they think about it. And that's what someone would not want to do. But when someone's more of a novice, there's the tendency to do that. It's the analytical mind, and you know, people have self-doubt about it, or they end up blocking what's coming through.
Hi, this is Simon. Do you have a fascination with reincarnation? And would you like to know about your past lives? I have a diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, and I conduct past life regression sessions over Zoom. If you'd like to find out how a session works for you, you can book a free 20-minute consultation on my website. That's at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The link is in the show notes. I get the impression that it's all very subtle and symbolic, because if I've seen mediums, they might say something, well, I'm getting maybe a G. Their main name might be George or Gareth. And then I'm seeing a car, I think it's 1950s. And so it seems like you're getting symbols and images. It's not like the spirit is sitting there and you can hear them saying, well, my name's George, I had this great car in the 1950s.
Well, okay, there's a couple of things. All right, it kind of depends on the particular medium, their development, and what their spiritual gifts are, and how the spirits are working them sometimes, which really has a lot to do with, you know, the energy which is present. I mean, if you're working with someone who's really enthusiastic about it and, you know, they bring in the right conditions, the vibrations typically will be really, really, really strong and conducive for the communications. Things are going to just come through really a lot stronger, more specific than if you have someone who's just like a corpse sitting in front of you. You know, they're just sitting there dead, which is just not good. It's not going to come through as strong. Now, when they work with mediumship, right, we're working with telepathic communication. It's mind-to-mind communication, and the medium's mind obviously is involved. You know, so they've got to kind of be in this receptive state where they receive the information, and then they have to be able to give it out. Now, when they first start training someone or working with someone, generally speaking, they're going to work with more, like giving the person more basic information, which tends to be pretty generalized. It's just like if you were learning how to read and write, you know, when you're little, you're 5, 6, 7 years old, 8 years old. You know, it's progressive, you know, and they start you out. Obviously, you have to learn how to hold your pencil or pen, but you learn your alphabet. And after you learn your alphabet, your ABCs, you have to learn basic words like cat and dog. And then you learn like simple sentences with cat and dog. But I mean, you even have to, before all of that, you have to learn with the alphabet how to write all the different letters. So you could write like a whole page on lined paper, just of one particular, you know, uppercase letter of a particular letter in the alphabet. So that's all like just the fundamentals to be able to read and write. So you can spell cat, and then you can write a real simple sentence, you know, see the cat ride the bike. Now, once you get that down, over a period of time, your ability to write and your ability to read is going to become more sophisticated. Mediumship's the exact same way, which is why when you see mediums work, a lot of what mediums will receive, it's very generic. You know, it's generalized. It could apply to a lot of people. And that's part of that's because that type of content, it's easier to transmit in a telepathic manner. I mean, if now with experiments, for example, J.D. Ryan, who was in Duke University in North Carolina, this is during the Depression era, 1930s, and even to the 1940s, he and his wife were doing all these different like ESP experiments, right, with telepathy. He even came up with different cards. And we think about information being conveyed telepathically. Well, you can have, you know, feelings being conveyed, you know, someone's like, let's say the feeling of anger, it's really strong. And mentally, you could send that. It'd be pretty easy to receive as well. Colors, you know, mentally, it's really easy to telepathically, like send the idea of a color to someone else and to receive that too. And then also just like shapes, that's also something that's real, really easy to transmit. So that type of basic information is easy to receive. Now, what happens is as a medium cultivates a really good foundation, the spirits are going to be able to give more specific type of information. Typically, it's going to be a lot easier. They do use a lot of, when it comes to clairvoyance, often they'll use symbology to get ideas across to people. And that's because one picture, it's worth 1,000 words. And it's a way of being able to to communicate and transmit information very quickly. You know, it's just one image. One image can have a lot of multi-layers to that image in terms of what it can actually mean, both literal as well as symbolic, which, as someone's developing and working with their helpers in the spirit world, who, and remember, all of mediumship, if it's being done in a structured, disciplined manner with a trained medium, it's teamwork. It's not just the medium haphazardly opening up to anybody who's there. Then you get all these like unreliable people coming through from spirit. You know, they have it really planned out. And so the spirits learn how to work with a medium to really give them information that they're going to say the right way. I mean, that's the bottom line, that the medium verbalizes what they're receiving and communicates it to the recipient so the recipient understands, or at least hopefully will understand if sometimes someone doesn't initially when they get it and then they look into it or that type of thing.
I think you said that the person that's coming to see you, the sitter, can affect how it all works. They might bring low frequencies. What advice?
It's people bring in energy into it. It's just like you have your mobile phone, you know, your cell phone, right? And you know, you're traveling. Let's say, I mean, for example, in the States, you go out in certain areas, it's all like mountainous, go to Nevada in the middle of nowhere in the desert. It's all mountains everywhere. You're going to lose your connection with a cell phone. I have like a new iPhone 16 that I got. Now I could take it there if the connection's not there. The technology is perfect. Nothing wrong with it. It might, or even we're talking now in Zoom. I mean, I've had a number of times where somehow the Zoom, you know, was slow or it got cut off, you know, this type of thing. That used to happen all the time on Skype. So with mediumship, it's sort of the same way. And so the individual, or if you have a group of people, they all bring in energy, you know, mentally, energy, emotions. And if you have really strong vibration, it's going to be a lot easier to work. It's going to come through a lot smoother. I mean, you need harmony. You need love, enthusiasm, you know, positive thoughts, as opposed to someone comes and they want to have it done a certain way, you know, or they're skeptical about it in a negative type of sense. It's not saying someone can't work with that. I mean, the spirit world can work with people, but it's kind of messes up the stuff compared to what it could be in my experience. And I do get people like that. Sometimes it's just like there's, like I said, like a corpse in front of you. It's like a wall there almost. And the information doesn't come through quite as strong as it could. And I call these readings from hell, literally. Oh. You know, and they might not be happy with what you're doing and they're all, you know, whatever about it. So it's, that can be a real challenge compared to, I mean, for example, let's say you have someone who's, again, they have the right, they bring in, they're just really enthusiastic and very open, which doesn't mean they're not skeptical about it, but how they approach it is very, 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 very different, so to speak. And that could be, you know, groups of people too. I mean, you'd be working with an audience of people, you know, if you're a theater medium and you go to the theater and everyone there is excited, you know, they're just so excited about it. And the vibrations are going to be real strong. And so the spirits can use that energy to communicate through the medium. So the medium will most likely receive very specific information. You know, it'll come through really clearly in a way that it might not quite. So if, let's say it's a really humid day and everyone just wants to go to sleep and there's no air conditioning, you know, they're practically, you know, they're just antagonistic or whatever, it's not going to work as well. And you can see this too with if you're a musician and you're playing on stage, you know, if you've got like this really, you know, audience that's really into it, it's going to be a great show. You're going to perform well. However, if somehow the audience isn't putting in the right type of energy, your performance to some extent is going to be definitely affected by all of that.
So is there a thing where you have to learn how to distinguish between what is a message from spirit and something you're imagining? Do you ever get that thing where you think, am I just making this up?
Well, what happens with mediumship? I mean, like, it's kind of like a very little between being psychic and being psychotic, right? So psychotic people become mediums. They go to spiritualist churches and start hearing, you know, you hear the voices and then you need to have medication, be institutionalized. No, but with mediumship, you know, when people start to open up, it's something that's in a lot of cases directed by the spirit world, right? They want to open people up and they want to get someone into it. So the tendency with what the spirits will do with some people is they'll show the person things. And this can be visual. It can be clairaudiently, you know, speaking to the person, or even inducing out-of-body experiences, things like this. but they'll go way out of their way to make it really, the person notice it, and the person will be able to tell that it's not their own thoughts. You know, they have these types of experiences. And the idea behind this is to get them into the development. Once they start getting into the development, it's not going to be quite as extreme or quite as strong with that type of phenomena or communications that might take place. However, if you just have like the average person, let's say that's not happening to, and they go to a spiritualist church and there's some type of development group circle where people are sitting, you know, they sit and meditate and go really, 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 really deep. And they're sitting there, the lights are all maybe dim or the lights are off. And they just have all these random images in their head, random thoughts come in. And, you know, they're not really sure, is any of this from the spirit world? You know, maybe it isn't. And so they're not really necessarily going to be able to recognize the difference between their own imagination, something that's really coming in. Now, there is a difference, and it can be very subtle, but the spirits might not come in really strong in that type of situation. And it can really take someone who's just starting out a bit of time before they actually are able to differentiate. In fact, some teachers who run development groups don't really help the person who's learning to be able to do that. You know, someone could sit for a long time. They just sit there in a class for mediumship and they don't really feel that they get anything, but all this stuff is taking place in their head, but they just don't recognize it as such. And, you know, most likely a lot of it is their own thoughts. However, mixed in with that probably are impressions that have been placed there by the spirit operators. Now, I remember when I was first sitting in development class and went to the circle and everything at a spiritualist church, and I had had a lot of experiences, you know, with spirits talking to me, you know, clairaudiently, you know, seeing things and you know, very, 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 very strong. However, when I was sitting in the group, I remember all this distinctly. I had like all these different thoughts in my head, and you know, one image would sort of like blend with another one that would blend with another one, just random. And the teacher, you know, at the end, you know, we'd go around after the meditation and people would share. And some people, you know, got messages, you know, they were experienced or they're learning how to receive and deliver messages. And then, you know, I just remember I didn't really have anything to share. And I remember at one point after the class, this took place, I think it was like at 1 on a Saturday, 1 in the afternoon. I remember I was hanging out with this one kid from class and we were off, you know, doing some stuff. And he said, well, you know, I've got to be back by a certain time because I have my piano lesson. So it dawned on me, you know, it hit me when he said that. It's like, oh, because during the circle, when we were doing the meditation part, I had seen him in my mind playing a piano. And I didn't think anything of it. When I saw it in my head, I just thought it was some kind of random thought. So after that, you know, I started paying a lot more attention to what I was experiencing. And what the spirits will do in a development group often is, you know, the clairvoyance, again, it'll sort of start off just all these like random images, and the images might blend together. And then what they'll do is they'll implant like one image really, 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 really strongly. So and it will kind of stand out from the rest of your thoughts. Now, when that happens for a person who's sitting, what they'll usually end up doing is they'll start, you know, maybe their mind will wander and they'll start thinking about other stuff, but the spirits will continually keep impressing with that one image and it'll just stay there. You know, it could be 5-10 minutes later after they initially notice it, it'll still be there really strong. And that's one way for someone who's starting out to kind of know that they have something. Now, that what we usually happen after that, when someone's sitting in a development circle, is the individual who is experiencing, you know, this image in their head that really stands out, will feel a pull to someone else in the group. It might be someone sitting across from them or next to them. You know, they might just get a real sense of that person visually or just through feeling that they're supposed, you know, that image is for that person. So in the very beginning, it's like testing a radio, you know, that does it work or not. Your walkie-talkie, the person's, you know, on the other, you know, maybe they're on the other side of wherever, you can't see them, and, you know, you'll speak through the walkie-talkie. just to see if they get the message. And there's no important significance to the message. It's just to see if the person's able to receive. It's the same thing with mediumship, and it's like the ABCs. So they'll start just giving you these messages that might not have any meaning, you know, through imagery. Once someone gets that down, they're going to be able to start giving messages that sort of, like, for example, you might see a beach ball with someone, and you know, what do people symbolically, what does a beach ball represent? Well, I know for myself, if I saw a beach ball, it represents play. You know, people go to beaches and they toss it around. It's like having fun and play. Now, you could tell that to people. You know, you could tell that to anyone. You know, they're like a workaholic. You need to play more. See a beach ball with you. I mean, unless they're a clown or something. I mean, most people, it's very generic, probably need to have a lot more play, you know, to balance their lives out. So they'll start out with real basic types of symbols like that. And then as one progresses, one as a novice will develop almost like a vocabulary of different types of images. And they use what things mean to the particular individual who they're working with. You know, it's like a type of psychic shorthand. As I said, you know, one picture's worth a thousand words. So they can really get across ideas, you know, very simple things to very, 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 very complicated, more sophisticated amounts of information. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think it's a thing where mediumship is a lot more complicated than people think. And it really does take years to master it.
It takes years. Yeah. And even years, you're still working. I mean, I've been into this decades and decades and decades, you know, and I'm still like, you know, I'm always trying to work at it. And, you know, again, it's teamwork. So it's like anything. I mean, on the other hand, you could certainly be into it for a long time and just be sort of not put a lot of energy into it, not do it a lot. And it's not going to be necessarily what it could be. That's the whole thing. So it's really important to put energy into it. But I mean, when someone is learning how to, I mean, for example, work with symbology. I remember I you know, they do use what's in your head, and one image that means something to you, Simon, might mean something totally different to me and different to another person as well. Although you certainly have in some cultures, a particular image might mean a certain type of thing. You know, you see that like a snake in China is good luck. A snake in Europe or the States tends to be associated with evil or, you know, something that's not so good. In some places in Africa, they wear white, you know, when someone has passed over, like at a funeral. Now in Europe, it's typically like black, you see. So there's this whole cultural type of aspect. But, you know, it's really important for mediums to sort of like develop their own encyclopedia, their own, you know, have a good idea of what different types of images will mean. In terms of so when they do receive it, they're able to actually say things. And the spirits, again, they start out with real basic stuff and they expand upon that and everything. I remember, and this is like years ago, I remember I had like this, I was in this one class, I told the students, we were talking about symbology. I was just saying, well, you know, get an encyclopedia of symbology, you know, and like look at it and, you know, and learn that, because that will actually help you, you know, in terms of kind of understanding how symbols work, and then you can integrate it into your work. And this one student, he went to the mall, he went to one of these bookstores there, and he purchased this book, Encyclopedia of like Symbols, you know, and it was like all these visual, you know, different types of symbols. And he read the book and he basically memorized all the symbols. After that, his guides worked with him using that imagery, with the exact definitions within that particular book, which I don't necessarily, I mean, even though I kind of said it in class, I kind of think it's a good thing to develop your own based on what something means to you. But there's different layers of imagery too. So for example, I mentioned like the beach ball, someone shows that to you. On a real basic type of level, that's what that means. And probably, you know, you can say that just like to anybody in most cases. I mean, I know I tend to overwork, you know, I need to play more. However, let's just say, you know, you get in beach ball. And yeah, the person does need to play more. But let's say, for example, they had an uncle that owned some type of like beach ball factory, literally, you see. So that could be very specific and very evidential too, depending on, you know, the context of why the spirits, you know, what they're actually trying to convey.
Could you tell us about one standout time you had with somebody came to see you? Is there something that really stands out in your mind that was an amazing session?
Well, the thing with sessions is, okay, so when I'm working, you know, I connect to the spirits and I don't shut up, you know, I get, it's like a flow of information and, you know, which I verbalize. And, you know, it's really important for me is just to kind of give it out and to keep their analytical mind out of it. So, and I think this would be true with, you know, generally speaking with all mediums, you know, you give stuff out, you don't necessarily retain it at all and everything. Now, I will remember things if it's something in an educational type of sense, like an anecdote that I can share with students. Like there's just, you know, sometimes you have some type of session and what comes through is a little bit weird or a little bit unique, you know, that stands out, that type of thing, or a certain type of example, you know, that's going to benefit students. And then sometimes people too, you know, will share, oh, you said this and it meant this. And but in terms of, I mean, I guess there's so many different sessions. I mean, every single one of them is probably pretty cool. But, you know, the thing with it is I don't necessarily know how the information has helped someone else in a lot of cases or the impact it had. You know, you could say something and it's pretty mundane or it would seemingly be really mundane and not that special, but it's massively special or significant to the recipient, you know, because it's for them and relating to them and the life or the person who's coming through from spirit. But I'm trying to think if there's any things that really, I mean, every time I work or do a session with someone, it's a learning experience and it's pretty neat. I mean, because you can describe all these things about different spirit people. I mean, I can think of things. I mean, let me see. I'm trying to think. Okay. So, you know, I teach mediumship. And, you know, let's say I was talking about, I can think one or two examples here. Just because, and the only reason I remember these things is because they're a little weird, but also because as a student medium, it's going to give you sort of an idea of what can be done. So or how they might bring through using certain senses and ways of getting the information across. So I remember one time I had this one student, this one medium, and I was working with her. And I remember the first thing I heard when I connected to the spirit world, I heard an explosion. Now, right after that, I simultaneously, you know, I mentally received a name and I started, you know, feeling the person and the description of the person and sensing and everything as well. But the very initial thing was like this explosive type of sound. It was quite loud. And this was her grandfather, you know, and he came through by name, but the explosion, he was farting. He was passing air. And he used to do that around the house all the time. You know, he'd just go around the house and fart and ha, 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 ha. You know, this is something he did within the family, right? So that, I mean, obviously, you know, very evidential, you know, related to him, related to his personality, the way he was. But when I'm teaching clairaudience, that's something I usually mention. Now, I think that's the only time of all these thousands of readings I've done where someone's ever farted, you know, when they've come through from the spirit world. But, you know, it's one of those things that stands out and it just gives someone who's learning this an idea of the types of sounds you can hear. It's not just, you know, hearing a dog bark or you hear some music or something like this, you know, or the spirits, you know, speak their name or that type of thing. And then another example, I use for teaching sometimes, which I always think is kind of funny. I remember I had these women come for a session, and I remember in the very beginning of the session, I smelled something like absolutely disgusting, you know. And I simultaneously, you know, I felt, you know, I was kind of like sturdier in my build, and my belly was kind of big, and I felt like I was wearing like this undershirt that hadn't been changed in a couple of weeks. But the first thing when this all started was just the smell. And it was this, I think it was like their father, and he was coming through. And this guy never changed his shirts at all. Like, let's say we're in a group, you know, with a group of people in a room, you wouldn't want this guy there. I guess he just would wear the same shirt. It's really foul. Now, it's not like he doesn't have any hygiene in the spirit world, obviously, but that's something, you know, in an evidential type of sense that it was one of the things that he related and everything. So that's like another thing that stands out. And so if I'm teaching, you know, the smelling, that's one of the things I'll bring up as an example of something that you can smell.
Well, it's been great talking to you. It's been so interesting. The book is Spiritual Mediumship, A Medium's Adventures with the Spirit World. But you have other books as well, don't you?
A Medium's Adventures with the Spirit World, which is kind of like my memoir, and that's on Amazon. And I've got two other books. I've had my first book, which came out over 10 years ago. It's called Mediumship Mastery, The Ultimate Guide, The Mechanics of Receiving Spirit Communications. And that's really good. That's massive amount of exercises. It's really good for both novices as well as people who are pretty experienced with it. And it's used in development groups, literally worldwide. You know, people use it for teaching. It's not like one of these sort of superficial, surface level type books in terms of the information. The other book I have is Mediumship Mastery 2, Advanced Techniques That Work. And that's even though it has the word advanced in it, that's good for people at all development levels as well. And that has 300 exercises. And I'm really into the teaching aspect, but, you know, that gets into mental mediumship, we get into the, you know, physical phenomena and trance, all of these types of things, and healing. And it's really good material.
Do you have a website?
Yeah, I do. You know, steveherrmanmedium.com, which I need to update. I've actually got to sort that all out at some point. I have a YouTube channel, which has mainly videos which are more educational in nature in terms of helping people with their development. And I teach a lot of classes in person and online, do a lot of workshops. And I travel all over the place. And I've done quite a bit of work over the years in the UK too, as well as all over. So, and individualized mentoring or coaching when it comes to mediumship too.
Well, fantastic. And thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. I think whatever you're doing with it, I think it's really wonderful, because the more that people learn about this, the better.
This week, I was talking to Steve Herrmann about his book, Spiritual Mediumship, A Medium's Adventures with the Spirit World. If you want to hear the rest of this fascinating interview, you can sign up to Patreon. The Patreon episodes are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. You can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ourparanormalafterlife or click on the Patreon button on my homepage at pastliveshypnosis.co.uk. The links are in the show notes. And my book, titled Verified Near-Death Experiences, is on Amazon. You can get it on paperback, audiobook, or Kindle. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.